what helped me, I started the clinical psychology, where I worked in the day at 2 hours in the morning
of challenges around there. So the total is 37 million as opposed to the 23 from last year. The training budget for home builders is broken down per province on this slide. Capital budget, we envisage to spend about 9.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to personally thank the nice lady there in giving us this presentation. I think it's about time that we have this in various areas and also in various provinces as to bring about the learning test. It sounds very interesting to me. I just wanted to know that whether you have included a clothing manufacturing industry in your program for the people to learn. Thank you.
Let me welcome the presentation and also a comment from Jemima for this initiative, because to me it is something that I think somewhere with regard to the economic growth in the country, especially with regard to aviation, which then brings up the economic growth. But I think Mr. Breyer captured some of the things that I wanted to say, but to clarify myself, where this thing starts. Whether this is an original idea, or have we checked whether there is any other institution that is also doing this, but not doing this properly. Whether it is an original idea, that's what I wanted to say. And where are you located? Where are these people? Where do you start? Who are you targeting? Where are you going to start? What is it that you are going to have in place to start in order to get this off the ground? If the department, if you get support right from here to the Department of Labor, order for you to get this on the ground? Where will you be located? Who will you be targeting, in order to be able to see the success of it? I also want to check whether you have, interacted with the feeder. That indicates to us to you what was the interaction working. The other thing is that, when you deal with issues like this with entrepreneurs, we have got a situation where in the country our focus might be on the infant industry. How do we then get our infant industry structured up? And do we need to protect those industries? And how do we protect those industries if we have those industries in place? And if those industries will be in place, or entrepreneurship structures will be in place, for how long, if there's a need for them to be protected by government, how do we anticipate for how long will those industries be protected by government if the need for potential is supported by government? The question of the industrial policy, because now we are developing an industrial policy for the country, and we look at that, because we need to look at that as to see which way the government, the line of thinking in terms of the industrial policy.
Those were the questions from the
Supreme
Court of Economics. Just to explain about the factory, currently it is true that all accessible mentally handicapped are being there, watching them. The problem is there's a capacity for 3,000 people working in these factories. There's only 1,000 working at the moment. They don't know what to do with the factory. They want to close it, they want to sell it. That I do know. And that's what my idea came from. They're in such perfect condition. We don't want those people out of work. You want to add another more of the handicapped people, but the full complement is there, 3,000 again. The type of mentally handicapped person who works in the factory, it's not everyone, unfortunately. That's why, if you take the whole of South Africa, they explain to me, 3,000 is about what is the handicap in our section. So if you have one shift with 3,000, you keep being here. Then adding, what is my idea came from, is these factories not making money at the moment is because the handicapped person is too slow. He can't work under pressure, he cannot deliver, so they're not the customer because of that. Now what is now being added is that if we can add the non-handicapped person, teach that person to work with a handicapped person. The handicapped person can then later on work for the non-handicapped. So they learn to and work together and employ them in their businesses and further. So you never want to take them out of it. The factories are currently, in the old days, supplied to schools for furniture. And just look at, this is the type of furniture they're making in this factory. The quality is extremely good. All the government buildings, hospitals, all the equipment in there comes from these factories. Now these hospitals and schools are ordering from private people, which each charge their own price, so that's why the price will come out. There is, they're using solid wood in the factory, there's steel, wood, and the linen, the textile. But the linen section is only to make sheets. It's not dresses, it's not finalized, it's something else. And it can, everything can be added because it's about 20 machines in every. Factory. I just want to go back. These are the towns that currently exist in the two at Cape Town and two in Johannesburg, and the others are there. If you look at these towns, and every single one of them, except for Kimberley, although Kimberley does have a university now, if the university works together with each factory, the qualification has a high standard. And the idea is not to give a qualification out that's not recognized. That's just the one. I can just, in the same time, add the CETA question also comes in here. I went to CETA. They prepared to give me all the training
doesn't have it to open a business, and he should. I think it should be part of his training to open his business with his trade if he wants to. And that, to me, will help the unemployment. 6,000 people go out in previous time, and they each employ one person. At least we can make a difference in South Africa. To answer the economist's question, and understanding the factory, is it enough detail that I gave now of the factory? Australia, is it enough detail about the factory?
Yes, thank you, Michael.
The origin of the idea is not, the only idea I find, universities have entrepreneur training. There's entrepreneur training available. There's learnership available training. But not one company is combining it. They train you in your job, what you're supposed to do, the technical side to do your specific job. But they never train you for the person, the holistic of the person, because the entrepreneur needs to know him or herself very well and be equipped to start a business, because it's very tough. And normally they find out different things as they progress, how to work with people, how to manage people, how to manage themselves. And those things you'd like to train them while they get trained in a track. The idea is not to open a business specifically in these trades that you learn. The factory, to me, is a business. And you need to train the entrepreneur, the orders you're getting in, the basics, the realistic of a business. If you're going to make stuff, you sell it, you have to pay salary. Do they understand the whole concept before they buy the machine? Because there's a big cash flow problem with entrepreneurs. And they need to understand, and I think they need to learn it systematically, not in a one-year course or three-month course. You cannot apply that knowledge yet. And the factory is the idea that you learn something, you apply it in the factory off, under supervision. So when you go out at 3 or 4 years, there's another system implementing for a mentor for you when you start your own business. But at least we're there to assist our learners and our future business people to start correctly and then carry on from there. So the concept is original to put everything together, but not one of the courses. The target group will be your matrix. I would really like to get them before they hit the street, because they're so excited, they're in school, they're in a learning environment, and what happens, they can't get work, they can't get into universities, it's too expensive. I'm thinking of domestic workers that they don't have the money to send their children. And if that child can immediately start working and earning and looking after himself, there's no pressure. And there's time, because we all know we come out of school with all sorts of ideas to run the world and do everything, but you need a training facility to mentor you while for that. I look into all the policies like CETA, like with the university, the training policy, everything. And the university are skilled in those policies to help that we do the right thing. Also, you don't want people to start there and then after 3 years say, no, you're not going to go anywhere, because now where do we go? We want to stay there. They cannot stay. They need to qualify and go out for the next person to come in. But they will be trained and assist the whole 3 years while they're there, so that they can fall into their own business.
Yeah, I
don't
have
this,
but I can
Yes, I'm being with them. I know how you can get sponsored through them, business plan through them. They also really support us. They feel that we can work together, because this institution will help. The university has the skills to train people, and also just to direct and help so that it is done properly. I spoke on the business school in Bloemfontein.
Now the follow-up is that you know, this is very interesting. I like this idea. Very interesting. Interesting because some you know, your target group, as you explained, it makes a lot of sense. But I want you also to have a look at the situation where, you know, since 1992, when we have, you know, transformation in the economy of the country, we have volumes of companies who have transformed the workplace, and many, many employees were retrenched. Many of them are unemployed. Now, if we become practical, not necessarily becoming bureaucratic and, you know, looking at, you know, the formalities of those, because there are many people on the ground who is not actually sitting at classroom, who have experience, who want to move, but they can't move because somehow there's nothing that they can do to assist them to move. Some of them can weld. Some of them, you know, they're helping with the workplace and their experience. You know, how do we begin to assist also in touching onto those people? Because I know from my experience point of view that those people are still there. I worked in the mine. I know many of the people who are still sitting there. If we only target the school leavers, the current pupils at school, and forgetting to those people, we might also be missing a point because they are in their numbers. I'm not saying that if we deal with this matter, we must look into this and become practical. And I'm mentioning practically because we presented a factory in Cape Town. And those people are doing, you know, they are training artisan aid. That we used to call artisan aid. They also, the stages of their training deals with the artisan aid, and they deal with the artisan level. They also deal with the helper, because at the workplace we used to have those people who could just help. But their training, the way it is an electrical training, the setup there, it makes a lot of sense. Without, you know, looking at what the people have in terms of a piece of paper that can show them who is what you can do. But they are doing that. They are doing a very good job. That you will, as a
committee. Thank you, Sadie. Can you take the last two hands, because we are very...
Thanks, Chair. I just want to start with the question is, what are
how we were dealing as a portfolio committee with the self-employment sector, dealing with the disabled people. If handicapped and disabled are very close, then I want to ask, what is the relationship between the Kabaskaki organization dealing with disabled and with the self-employment sector? Because I have a little bit of paper overlapping. You actually overlapping, and then because she asking, is it possible that you can meet with the minister so that you can explain a project or idea to the minister, because the Department of Labor is dealing with child employment. The other thing going to say is that there is actually a big concern about those who are not so well educated or can't actually finish the scholarship term matric. And we in our areas, and I think it's also KwaZulu-Natal, we meet with the oversight in August last year as a portfolio committee. We're also visiting that area where people, maybe they finish grade 8, but they can't go to the next level according to the type of understanding or whatever. So, but if they are good in the hands, and they maybe they finish to doing artisan in that school, to doing cooking in that school, and so forth, but there's no institute who can take their kids further when they finish that type of training in that type of school. So I want also to know from Ms. Roskafni side of you, how are they listening about the type of institute?
Okay. Maybe on that one, Date Morakaba will also assist on some of your questions. Before you, Date Morakaba, can I give the last two questions and then give you? Then from there, maybe you'll try and assist on some of the questions so that we make it happy. Ma'am, is it?
Yeah, well, Ms. Clark. My question is your training based or linked with the demand for the entrepreneurs in the employment market? To say, I have got this kind of trained people, but there is a demand out there. So you don't train people and just let them leave them to go on the market, you know, some sort of employment. Do you link yourself with the old manufacturers and the demand in the market for these kind of skilled people? Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jim. Very briefly. Let me also welcome the presentation and wish you all success in the endeavor. But just to say that if you're speaking about the same shared employment sector, which are funded by the Department of Labor, they are currently undergoing through some transformation and R&D process. And I've got no doubt that any other intervention that can assist to make them sustainable will be welcome. But also, Chairperson, just to clarify that, because I had Mrs. Lobas-Krasny saying that if we approve, that we must not find ourselves in a situation where we are the ones that approve. We can only introduce her to the department, and then they will engage in the department, because there will be many other people there who would also be having an opportunity and having ideas. And I'm sure that they would like anything that can assist. These sectors have been with us for a long time now, and they are not able to sustain it. And any idea, I'm sure, would be welcome on this department. I just wanted to say thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think Honorable Mzonde covered me on the first point, because there is a process that has also involved a number of aspects from Treasury on the review of this shelter employment factory trade and profitable, including the review of the whole question of preferential procurement in terms of the state also there's been extensive discussion with the veterans, the disabled people's organizations, and a number of other stakeholders around their future, and one of them includes training. Now, Chairperson, rather than also echoing on what the government was saying, is that maybe it's not even the problem. I think I would advise that we direct it to the committee that is reviewing the shelter employment factory and looking to their strategy, because they also report directly to the minister, and rather than making all these circles, it's easier to go directly to the people involved. But there are two things here. The one is that if Ms. Lassani be a training provider, and this is where the contradiction and the thin line becomes, especially when a committee or the department recommends a person to an institution. Normally, we have agreed with the sheltered employment sector that we will fund the training under the National Skills Fund that is to happen in that area. Now, the simple procedure for that is to follow the procedure of registering as a training provider under the normal treasury procurement processes, so that when such request or need arises from the sector, whatever organization or the university could then be considered along those lines. Because you run into problems, you all understand the PFMA and the treasury requirements. If you put in a provider and you introduce, when you come to the open tendering process, it becomes complex because of the process that you involve in yourself earlier. So they will have to decide as to whether they want to be introduced as a training provider, which means they must just go and register as a service provider. Or if they want to contribute to the idea, then they must go to the, I can provide them with details of the lesson and the steering committee that is looking to the need. But then they cannot play the other role of provider because they would have been involved in the policy direction. And that is the choice that they need to make. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. I think the response or comment from the department is very clear. And I would rather say, can you just make a closing remark? You have half a minute.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think I can clear everyone. All your questions you raised is covered. The handicapped people there cannot open own business. They will be never taken away. But they excellent trainers that can train the non-handicapped, because they're just mentally handicapped, but they cannot operate in a normal environment. But if you go and visit them, they're very proud of what they're doing, and we want to keep them there. So they're permanent workers in the factory. Then I want to clear that anyone, to me, actually my franchise I bought, I've got a passion for learning disabilities. If you have a learning problem, I love it, and I like to work with it. So my passion is actually to help the learning disability people that cannot finish matric, that can run a business. The exams, and why is it this one? That first mind dynamics profile is not a written test. It's with body, which we want to implement. You go through that, we determine where you are, we can take you further. So anyone, any age can come in. But we don't, it's too open to put that on the market. So you have your target group of matric, but it's not limited. The other thing is, I've been, the training people that train these people, there's not one training provider. We can use different people. So one of the university, while the university comes in, they prepare to say, UTS, Technicon, these and these trainings, there's all this, and they just give an overall qualification that they've been trained in different sections. So the training provider that's existing at the moment, they all will be used rather than find new ones. I'm just a coordinator, putting everyone together and make sure that the training gets done. The exam, to get your qualification in the end, all the training people I spoke
Thank you. from the office of the speaker,
go straight into the main amendment, because Dr. Simpson took you to the depth of it, and I thought that I will not go through the presentation again, and I'll just go straight into the main act. Now, just a brief background, and this will be quite important when you finalize your process, that you have with you copies of the Manpower Training Act that we can still make available, because I know in the library you should be having those copies. But what is important is that section 12 to, I think, 32 of the Manpower Training Act, even though the Act is repealed, those sections remain in force, and they continue to govern the apprenticeship system. And when it comes to the Skills Development Act, I think it is also important that you have all the copies. Now, within the department, we have tried, because we know that in our interaction with the skills, with the government printers, they told us the difficulty. But what we've tried to do is that each time there are amendments, because a lot of people struggle to make the cross-referencing. This will be the fourth time when we are coming to Parliament to request that the Act be amended. The first set of amendments on the Skills Development Act 1998 are contained in the Skills Levies Act 1999. And then the second set of amendments are contained in the Skills Development Act Amendment 2003. And then what we are now coming up with is again a number of amendments that will be the Fed. There were other minor amendments that were like one or two pages, but I'm sure the state law advisors will be able to guide you in that process, because they have all sets of amendments, and we also have all those sets of amendments. And when we read this bill, I would suggest that maybe you go straight to page 19 of the bill. If you take the printed version of the Skills Development Amendment Act, because I think that would be much more easy. The memorandum of objects on the Skills Development Amendment Bill. Now, if maybe it will be of assistance through our offices, we can also provide, and maybe working with the State Law Advisor's Office, we have filed a number of memorandum of amendments on the object of the bills that we have submitted, so that those of you maybe who would want to refresh your memories on some aspects that we introduced, you can then refer to those. We can bind them properly in a tag, so that you avoid the cross-referencing of a number of publications, because they can be confusing. Now, Chairperson, if I'm to take the memorandum of objects, and the purpose, I think there are a number of six key areas. The others are technical in nature. But the first thing that we wanted to do was to try and clarify by removing uncertainties on the future of the apprenticeship system in the country. You will recall that there has been this argument that the department is going to do away with the transition, the apprenticeship system. Now, if you go to the bill itself, I mean to the Act, the existing Act, and you go to Schedule 2, that is where you will notice that the way the transitional provisions have been written create the assumption that if you have a Minister of Labour who can wake up tomorrow and decide to do away with the apprenticeship system,
they will completely do away with it. And that, unfortunately, resulted in some doubt in a number of industries to take on the further apprentices for training purposes. But at the same time, there were economic issues, and the downtrend in the training of apprentices did not happen because of that clause. It has been going on for quite some time when the economy was down. And in fact, if you look at the number of learnership, they've peaked significantly, and some of them are now in line with that. So the first thing was to remove those perceptions and to clarify quite clearly how the impact the apprenticeship system relates to the learnership system. And the second thing was to then repeal the remaining sections of that Manpower Training Act completely, because there are 18 regulations that currently remain in force under the Manpower Training Act. And just to give you an illustration, if you are an electrician, even though you did the same trade test, if you trained in the metal industry, the way the regulations are done is that you cannot move into the mining industry, and if you are in the mining, you cannot go into motor. But people have been able to move because of the skill shortage. But the way the regulations were done was to prohibit the movement of people from a number of industries. So by clarifying and removing all those uncertainties and repealing all the provisions of the Manpower Training Act that remain in force, including the associated regulations, we will then deal with that problem once and for all. The second one was to support the accelerated delivery of quality and quantity of skilled artisans in the country. Now, the issue here is that there has been a problem around targeted training. And if you look at GIPSA, there has been an issue around focus and making sure that as a country we prioritize and we are able to basically come up with the training that is targeted. We are facing 2010, and beyond 2010 there will be a number of projects such as agriculture. You have heard about the debate around food crisis and so on. And the question here was to make sure that in artisan training and in learnership and everything that we do, we train in those areas that are targeted where jobs are likely to emerge, so that we don't have a situation like today where you end up with a lot of people qualified, but we are not looking at the kind of new jobs that are emerging. And as the country, we complain about skill shortage, and yet we have a lot of unemployed people who are holding better qualifications that do not facilitate them to enter into employment. The third one was to strengthen the Department of Labor's capacity in relation to artisan assessment, moderation, and registration. This has to do with firstly, the fact that in the country we have a number of, we have INVELA as the National Assessment Center, but we have, under the Manpower Training Act, decentralized training. And there have been complaints, if you look at the Sasol case and a number of areas, that the other training centers that are out there, the quality assurance mechanism of making sure that the assessment is up to standard is not up to scratch. And now this will give us an opportunity to establish committees that consist of industry and labor representatives to work with us in the government, so that we are able to audit and ensure quality of artisan assessment throughout the country, and we don't have accidents and all those kind of things. The second thing is to make sure that the assessments that are conducted in terms of moderation are not only up to date, but they are in line with international standards. And the third one is around the registration, so that we are able to know on an annual basis how many artisans are in training, how many of them are still in the country, how many have left, Now, the fourth point, Chairperson, is to introduce this mechanism, the review that lasted for something like 7 years with the Department of Education, which at some stage was reduced to the fight between the Minister of Labor and Minister of Education. It was not the fight between the two ministers. The issue was basically around how do you make sure that people who are learning within industries are able to have the learning that they are acquiring certificated, accredited, so that when they go to universities or wherever, they don't have to start from the beginning. They can be given the necessary accreditation and so on. That is why the two ministers came up with that joint statement and at the skills conference and within the discussions with education, we were able to frame some kind of a framework. And this is not unique in South Africa. It's just unfortunate that members of the Labour Portfolio Committee could not go to the ILODC because you would have understood that internationally there is an acknowledgement of the workplace learning component and the need to have it given its status and so on. And that is why the focus of the ILODC was on skills for productivity and so on. And there is a report that we produce that we can share. So it's an international sense. And linked to this, we were able to do two things: to come up with the National Qualifications Framework Bill, and in the Skills Development Amendment Act, a section that deals with the Quality Council for Occupations and Trade. So the main act, and I think when we introduced the bill initially, we did indicate to the Portfolio Committee that there will be a need for maybe a joint session with the Education Portfolio Committee so that you understand that act, because partly what it will do is that it will amend the current South African Qualifications Authority Act. It will change the functions of the Qualifications Authority, and it has also amended the Higher Education Act and the Further Education Act because of the joint statement. So the National Qualification Framework Act is now, the Portfolio Committee on Education has already published an invite for hearings, and they will be conducting hearings. And I will request, if possible, that members of the Portfolio Committee, if you have time, attend those sessions because it links with this bill. What we did, because of the problems that we experienced in Parliament, there was an agreement by the two ministers that the section that deals with the world of work be retained in the Skills Development Act, and the sections that deals with the higher education and further education goes into the National Qualification Framework. And the National Qualification Framework does make cross-reference to the amendments that have been proposed in this Act. And then the last two main aspects in the bill was the issue of the National Qualification Framework. Honorable members will remember that this is the issue that has led to a number of qualifications under the NSF. The Portfolio Committee, the scope did request the Labour Portfolio Committee to look into this matter because it was a policy matter, so that we begin to clarify the legal status of the National Skills Fund, and that it then begins to account accordingly, because the current formulation in the Skills Development Act is problematic. And that is what we are also trying to clarify in this bill. And the last one, which is the main section also in this bill, is the whole question of the future of the productivity of South Africa, the previous NPI, National Productivity Institute. You recall recall that this is a body that was established way back in 1975. It is like the sheltered employment, the sectaries. There is no legal statute that established some of these bodies that we inherited. And to clarify their legal position and the link to the current policy framework, a chapter has been introduced to deal firstly with the NPI, its transition, and the link to youth development, because it has always been linked to the programs that I did. The other one that we were supposed to have looked at and to address the legal status was Umfomombo Youth Fund. You all know that Umfomombo also is a body that was established by a cabinet decision. And in going forward, we also had to address that problem. Now, we had to leave Umfomombo Youth Fund out of this process because of a parallel process that is happening, which is looking at the measure of Umfomombo Youth Fund and the South African Youth Commission, that is the National Youth Commission, NYC, to form what is called a National Youth Agency. So we have left those aspects out of this deal. But we have also left out some of the governance issues around CITES. Honorable members, we recall that we talked about the CITES review and all this. Now, when we went to NEDLEC, the stakeholders were saying that the issues that have been proposed are around efficiency and management, which were reached during the Growth and Development Summit, and they do not necessarily warrant policy change. They warrant stakeholders assuming responsibilities in those areas. That is why, Chairperson, if you look at the NEDLEC report, because after we came up with the areas that we thought we should amend, we published those. We did receive public comments, and we consolidated them, amended the first bill, and we took the amended version to NEDLEC in terms of the NEDLEC Act, and we also gave them copies of all the recommendations and comments that were made by the general public, and we had extensive negotiations on all the amendments, and that is why I'm sure the speaker or the office of the speaker should furnish you with a report signed by all the conveners of NEDLEC as the NEDLEC report as the outcome of this. And Chairperson, the only other thing that I could then say is that the rest of the section, because of those six main areas, they then have consequential amendments in the rest of the act. So all the underlying sections then deal with the amendment. I don't know if Chairperson, and those consequential amendments are captured in chapter one, because if you then take what I said, when you look at the definition, there was then a need to include additional definitions in chapter one. In chapter two, we had to adjust the functions of the NSA. Now, the first one was in relation to the NSF, because the current act basically says that the NSA disperse funds, and the NSA has not done this because it was going to be problematic, because as an advisory body, they could not at the same time serve as the executive authority. So what has happened since the inception of the act is that the NSA identified the strategic areas where the National Skills Fund should use its money, and then left the normal procurement to the TFNA, and that they did not disperse funds themselves. So the current new adjustment basically clarifies what the NSA is doing in terms of the NSS. Now, there's just an omission on the second line that is at the bottom. It says the NSA is being inserted to provide. Now, the omission there, I don't know what happened. It could have been in the document going up and down. It should say the new NSA function. The new NSA function is being inserted. So that new function is being inserted basically to clarify the relationship of the NSA and the Quality Council of Trade and Occupation, because this is a statutory body on its own and that is being introduced, and it could not have the NSA and the QCTO fulfilling the same function. We were going to have conflict. So the inclusion under the functions of the NSA just clarifies the relations. Under section 6, the only thing that is also being inserted there is to increase the number of NSA members. Currently it's at 30, by including an additional representative from the QCTO, because we want to make sure that when the QCTO functions, there is that relationship with the NSA and vice versa, because the QCTO will work with the Council for Higher Education and Further Education, and all of them are statutory bodies that look at quality, but they are not subject to the Council for Higher Education and so on. Now, under Chapter 3, the functions of the NSF, I mean the CTAS, are also slightly adjusted there, because the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations will now assume responsibility over the coordination of Quality Council. They will then delegate. Currently, the CTAS have to apply to SAQA for the delegation. And if you recall, and why the higher education is also being amended, is that higher education has refused or has put in a clause in the SAQA Act that basically makes sure that they maintain their independence out of the system. And the new National Qualifications Framework Bill is trying to make sure that there is synergy across the board, and all the higher education institutions will go to the Higher Education Quality Council. The schooling system will go to Umalusi for the accreditation, and all other training providers that do not fall within the higher education and the further education will now come to the QCTO for their accreditation for quality assurance purposes. So that is why the functions of the CTAS are also amended, because this function is being relocated to the QCTO. Chapter 4 under learnership, this is where the relationship between the learnership system and the apprenticeship system is now better clarified, so that we can then deal with the repeal of the Manpower Training Act in its entirety. Now, basically, the concept is simple. It is to say that learnership is a broader kind of a program, and within it, you can also have some other programs that can take a format of an apprenticeship, of an internship, of skills program. The idea here, Chairperson, is that a lot of people would complete a skills program, but they could not, even if they completed a number of skills programs, they could not produce all those credits to get a qualification that is at a learnership level 1. Now, the other thing is that some people will start an apprenticeship, which is a 3-4-year program. Now, if they drop out on the third or the fourth year, the bottom line is that they are not an apprentice, and they remain as either operators or whatever. So, the section 10 starts can learn and learn from it, especially three learnerships, and the accumulation of the three learnerships could give you an equivalent of an artisan status, because we now have a lot of people who are in learnerships, and companies favor learnerships because they are 1 year, they are much more flexible, they happen at industry and so on. So this chapter deals with all those processes. Now the learnership agreement also brings into line the apprenticeship agreement. Those of you who are familiar with the Manpower Training Act, you will understand that the Manpower Training Act provides a labor dispensation for the apprenticeship, which is not consistent with the basic conditions of the Employment Act and the Labor Relations Act, because currently as the registrar of manpower in terms of that act, I have to arbitrate on cases that result from the disputes in learnership, in apprenticeship, where else disputes that arise out of the learnership are resolved in accordance with the basic conditions of the Employment Act. So by redefining the apprenticeship in line with the learnership agreement, it will then solve that problem and bring the dispute resolution mechanism in line with the basic conditions of employment and the Labor Relations Act. And this is one of the problems that has made a lot of employers to run away from apprenticeship system, because the resolution of dispute took a very, very long process and was not consistent with the current act. In fact, if it was to be challenged, it would be illegal because it would not be consistent with the Manpower Training Act, because, but unfortunately we still have that section of the Act in force. Now, the administration of that is institutions under the Department of Labor, we amended the first one deals with the employment services. Here we were clarifying the role of the Department of Labor provincial offices in relation to the skills development and the rendering of employment services. The current act only clarifies the role of the provincial office and does not clarify the role of the provincial offices, and this was an omission in the previous act. On artisan development, basically this is where I talked about the question of the repealing of the act and making sure that we are consistent with both the basic conditions of Employment Act and the Labor Relations. The National Artisan Moderation Body, this under Section 26A, this is where we are clarifying also the role of Indiana, because the current role in terms of the Manpower Training Act is that of trade test assessment only. And we have always experienced problems, because when you want to introduce training and so on, those functions would be outside of the scope of the current act, and they created problems that could result in legal challenges for the institution if it was to take on additional functions. And the Auditor General has had a lot of discussions with us on the underutilization and so on. And the problem was not on the underutilization, but also on the legal framework, because we could have turned it to become a training center. But if, in terms of the law, you are an assessor and you also train, you face certain problems in the process. Section 26B clarifies the listing of trades. 26C talks about the registration of artisans, that issue that I talked about, around making sure that we have a register like the nursing council, like the medical health and so on, so that we are able to tell you when someone asks how many artisans are available in the country and all that, because we didn't have that provision. 26 D talks about the trade test, because this is one thing that the industry and the labor unions wanted to protect, because you cannot attain artisan status unless you complete a specific assessment, and that is what they wanted to retain. Now, under Schedule 2A, the transitional provision, we actually made sure that as we put some of these things into process, firstly, we don't disrupt the current processes, but we also do not cause problems. We provide some kind of a phased approach around doing away with those aspects under the Manpower Training Act, while at the same time introducing the new aspects under the current bill if the act is passed. 6B talks about the question of the Skills Development Institute. Now, honorable members, we have a national problem in that when the Manpower Training Act or the Integration Amendment Act was passed, you remember the law that brought together the manpower development of Botswana, the Manpower Act of CISCI, Manpower Act of Zenda, and so on, and those Manpower Training Acts of the self-governing territories, the Manpower Act of the former Lebowa, Gazankulu, and so on, and that is the self-governing territories, the independent states, that we had institutions like the regional training centers and so on that belong to this former homeland and independent states, and there were some that were under the previous government. Now, unfortunately, what happened was that those institutions were privatized, and some of them lost a lot of equipment, and as we speak, there is a problem around the training of artisans in a number of areas. So what the provision does is that it begins to reintroduce in the Skills Development Act the power to the minister, either through partnership with industry or partnership with the education department and so on, to be able to reestablish such institutions. You may have seen a lot of industries have turned, FCOM, Transnet, and so on, they had huge training centers, and they've turned them into conference centers and so on. But the idea is to now reinstate those into formalized training centers that can do what they were initially supposed to do and take on a large number of people to be trained in the various trades, because currently we don't have any to train them. Chapter 16 on the QCTO, I won't go back into that because it deals with all those issues around the QCTO and the joint policy statement. 2060 is the policy, that is the regulation, the establishment of the QCTO, the functions of the QCTO under H, the delegation of powers under 26I, and the regulations that the QCTO can make, and the composition of the QCTO that is included under Schedule 3. In terms of the workplace productivity, basically we did two things. Firstly, we clarified the establishment of productivity SA, which is formally the NPI, under 26K, and the functions of the productivity SA are also clearly outlined, and how the productivity SA is to be financed, and the regulations around their operations. Currently, they operate as a Section 21 company. There is a Schedule 3 public entity. They are funded by government, but they are also allowed to raise additional income, and that is because of the cabinet decision dating back to 1975. So with the passage of this bill, we'll be able to clarify all those aspects. Financing the skills development on the NSF, there are three issues here. The first one is to remove the limitation of the 2% on the administration of the NSF, because if you are to allow the NSF to operate as a public entity, it cannot maintain its operations within the 2%. And we wanted to bring it in line with the CTAS, because currently we limit that within 10%, but we believe that on the NSF, the DG and the minister, on the advice of the NSA stakeholder, will determine from time to time the current, that is the percentage that is supposed to be set on the administration of the NSF. And the issue that the SCOPA referred to the Labor Portfolio Committee, which is around the control of the NSF, whether it's an independent statutory body. What we have done and agreed with the stakeholders is that the DG becomes the accounting authority in terms of Section 49(2)(b) of the PFMA. Now, if the DG becomes the accounting authority, what it will do is that he or she, that is the DG, will be able to establish the necessary committees, because the stakeholders did not want a Fed or an independent body that is going to be out there. They were saying that we already have the 23 sectors looking after the individual sectors, but we also have the NSA, which is already looking at the policy advice. And the origin of the NSF was for a specific purpose, which is national intervention. And the NSA will obviously advise the minister around the projects that are to be funded. So the best thing is to have the DGB being the accounting authority, and that he can then clarify the administrative aspect. And the last section, Chairperson, just deals with the consultation process that we have followed in arriving at where we are. The state law advisors have also checked the bill in order to give us the necessary certification. It has gone through the external processes. It went through the cabinet process. It was referred to the state law advisors, and it is now in the hands. And Chairperson, during the public hearings, I can rest assure you that as for the labor organization, the industry, through the consultations that we have undertaken at NEDLIC, I don't believe that the portfolio committee will have problems. But without necessarily preempting your process, you still have to follow the normal processes. The youth, the communities, people with disabilities are part of the process, and government departments we consult extensively, because labor law, if you don't consult, and we look forward to our processes, and any way that you want us to assist, we'll be prepared to do that. And then if there are other omissions, the state law advisors would also highlight them. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much,
Nadia.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Can we first start with the minutes of the 20th of the
for youth, those who were just the minute of adopting those sets of minutes. Can I get an adoption of this, the 20th of June, I mean 20th of May, the minute, on Tate Nene, on adoption, second up.
Yeah. we've got through June 3rd and then next week I'm going to the chair and then went through every section and we're not there with that. That
now
we have and they came to observe the Netherlands for the day. And then they came.
Because then they would understand the whole bill, I mean the whole act.
But that one is going into the NPS. But that is a new bill altogether, which is given. But we can also give it to you. We can give it to her to print for you. Or you can forward.
Yeah,
why don't you forward?
No, I will
forward it to mine. You can forward it to mine.
Yeah, let me forward it to you.
I'm seeing that.
Let me forward it to you. How do I forward it? How are you?
How's the training of the women up there going? Is it still happening?
Yeah,
Joe. How do you forward
yeah.
it from this phone? Can I interrupt? Can I just take the number you told for? Okay. Okay. Hold on. 082-2903-902-2693. Cannot recognize one or more. Cannot recognize one or more.
Is it an email or is it?
It's an email.
Or you can use it as
an email.
Send it as email. Then it will
yeah.
go to my computer.
Yeah. No, it's from Kimberley.
So I'll take please.
use a women's month. There won't be anything before us. We are all going to prioritize our program. And of course, World Productivity Congress in Sun City, if you remember that we were invited by SA Productivity. But you'll get this in your pigeonhole. And of course, those submissions are going to be forwarded to the department, as I said earlier on, that department will be deliberating on that, so that they are allocated a day to respond to those before the another deliberation of the bill. So if there are questions, can I maybe hand over to Dati and Sony so that if there are questions of clarity, then you can have that. And then Dati Morotoba, I want to thank you very much for your leave and your team and also members, because we'll be going away now. This is our last meeting. Don't work yourself out on other issues. Just get ready, get prepared for public hearings. When we come back, we should be able to deal with this and finish off. And of course, to say to Metoliswa, thank you very much for coming. That Anthony, if Metoliswa would want to say something, I'm sure you will give her a chance to do so. And thank you very much. And members, please enjoy your recess and good work for that. Thank you very much. Can you take over, Dati?
Thank you.
Go well, sir.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Jefferson. You want me to take over? The power vested in me, I will. Well, thank you very much, Jefferson. I think we have made it easy for me, and I will not waste any time. Like I said, with the power vested in me for a few minutes, I will be, you know, in control. And I hope you cooperate. Thank you very much. Honorable members, can we then raise questions for clarity and any comments that you would like to make? I've noted Mr. Jibali, Monkize, any other hand? Of course, we have dealt with this at workshop level. I think most of the members are now aware what is going on in the content of the bill itself. Mankiza, the platform is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I want to compliment and thank the presenter. I just pray that this should have come a bit earlier instead of such late in the day in respect of amendments to this bill. I want to say that these amendments are very, very interesting. And we would like to see that we conclude this bill as quick as we can, because it really affects in various ways where I can see that there are obstructions in respect of actually obtaining various different skills where persons are restricted. And for that, I want to say that I do hope that somewhere along the line that this is not taken off the door, because it's a very interesting thing to say, let's open doors that one could obtain various different kinds of skills for them to move into those fields instead of just having one kind of a skill, and in that department they do not find a job, and that's where they find themselves out in the street. So I would welcome this amendment, and we do hope that we conclude this bill as fast as we can. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Shonkize. Any other input? If none, at this point, I will then.
On a lighter note, I think we want to thank Ms. Laboskakhe for indicating that there won't be any problem. The in advance is already indicated.
No, I got them for
the shortest agendas. And all the meetings where you go to say, well, this shouldn't be a long meeting, end up being the longest meeting. And one of the biggest agendas are usually the shortest ones.
No, all I can say is that you know, my view is that we should always allow them, you know, space to criticize constructively,
sure,
to show us the loopholes. Because if they don't do that, we might take this through this process and, you know, at the end of it or at the implementation level, something will then come out. But if you give them the opportunity, you know, to raise these things and close the loopholes, I think we'll run smoothly that side of the road. And my view is always that if there's anything that you would want to raise, please raise it. There's no opposition. Thank you very much. I would like to give the state law advisor, Mrs. Gordo, just to, you know, to make an input, and then we will close the session. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, sir, at this stage, sir, I don't have anything. So I'm looking forward to engage on more sessions through the passage of this bill. I'll be attending each and every meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. That being the case, I think we have come to the end of this session, and this meeting is good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
I'm told lunch will be coming at 1:15. What time is it now? Can we come back for lunch? Honorable members. Thank you very much.
I think you must be the chairperson all the time. The meeting becomes very short.
No,
that's
not
a good idea.
I am not
my
chairperson.